You're listening to PetLifeRadio.com. Is your pet stressed out? Does your pet need annual vaccines? Which pet is best for a child? Would you know if your dog was in pain? Pet Life Radio presents The Pet Doctor, where you'll learn everything about keeping your pet healthy and happy. From pet care, pet meds and grooming, to pet food, pet insurance and dental care, this is the place to find out everything there is to know about pet wellness. Whether you have a dog, cat, reptile or rabbit, you'll find answers for your pets straight from the vets, because it's your pet. Health matters. Please welcome your Pet Doctor host, veterinary media consultant and veterinarian, Dr. Bernadine Cruz.
Breakthroughs in veterinary medicine have saved lives and proved countless others. We almost take it for granted that when you or your pet becomes ill, that there will be a safe and effective medication or treatment. But how do these breakthroughs come to be? Were the studies conducted on lab mice or dogs kept in research kennels? Why can't researchers do all the studies with computers and not use living animals at all? How are safety and effectiveness measured? And what about the bias in response to a treatment? Is it fair to an ailing animal to give them a placebo rather than potentially life-saving medicine? My guest is Dr. Eric Weisner, director of the University of California, Davis Veterinary Center for Clinical Trials. We'll discuss ways your dog or cat can help advance the health of pets afflicted with various conditions, as well as assist people with similar maladies. We'll be right back after the short break.
Please have a seat in the waiting room. The doctor will be with you shortly, right after these messages.
Are you confused by the overwhelming number of supplements for your dog? Developed by a veterinarian, Dr. Baker's all-natural canine system saver is designed to address many of the common problems your dog faces today, including allergies, inflammatory diseases, arthritis, hip dysplasia, geriatric problems, and more. Restore and maintain your dog's health with Dr. Baker's all-natural canine system saver. Order two bottles today and receive 20% off plus free shipping. Visit CanineSystemSaver.com.
To get this special offer, enter coupon code RS20 at checkout.
It's DesignerPetSweaters.com. Hand-knitted designer sweaters for your precious pup or cool cat. Beautiful couture patterns for your pets, including custom-knitted formal wear, casual wear, yachting, and even sports-themed. Many designer pet sweaters include feathered tammy hats, top hats, and a lot of sparkle. Each sweater includes leg loops, front paw sleeves, and leash opening. Visit DesignerPetSweaters.com to order your four-legged fashions today. Your pets will stay warm for the winter and be runway ready. Large or small, we fit them all. DesignerPetSweaters.com.
Let's Talk Pets on PetLifeRadio.com. Welcome back to The Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio. The doctor is in, and we'll see you now.
Dr. Weisner, thank you so much for being with us today. This is an area that I think people really have a lot of questions, and I know you'll give us some great answers.
Yeah, it's an exciting new area for us, too. We've been conducting veterinary clinical trials for years, but it's really gaining momentum these days.
Give us a little background. Who is Dr. Eric Weisner?
Well, I'm a longtime faculty member at the University of California at Davis. I'm a radiologist in the hospital, and I've taken on some leadership roles over the years, and most recently I've taken on the role of director of our Veterinary Clinical Trials Center.
So we'll ask that question. Clinical trials, it sounds like it's experimentation that's being done on people and pets. So really, what is a clinical trial?
So to answer that question, I'll pose a question to your listeners, and that is, what would you do if today you were diagnosed with a medical disorder that didn't have a good treatment? And I know what I'd do. I'd get on the internet, or I'd start contacting major human facilities all around the country to determine whether there was a clinical trial that might be available that I could enroll in. So veterinary clinical trials are almost identical to our human clinical trial counterparts. You can almost envision these as a pediatric clinical trial where our owners are serving as the parent of the patient.
It would seem as though you're putting your your baby, your cat or dog, in the hands of the unknown. But I guess there's nothing that can be done oftentimes for this disease. So is it always unknown diseases, new diseases, or are they trying to perfect and improve treatments for existing known diseases with treatments?
So all of the above. For many of the disorders that we deal with on a daily basis, there are no good therapies. And so we're constantly striving to identify new therapeutics, new diagnostics, new medical devices that will really improve the standard of care for our patients. And so this might be a situation in which we're looking at a new pharmaceutical that might have a better therapeutic response than the current drugs that we use. It might be a new medical device, an implantable device that may improve a patient's condition. We also run into situations, unfortunately, where cost is an obvious factor for some of the current therapies that we have. And so we oftentimes are looking at novel therapeutics that might be less expensive and perhaps easier for both owners and patients to tolerate, both in terms of the medical issues associated with that therapy and the costs involved.
A lot of it gets down to cost, and I'll have so many clients coming into me and something that I know is treatable, a skin condition, maybe allergies. Allergies are so common in the United States. And we say, okay, I have this treatment and it will cost X. And oftentimes people can't afford it. So is this for a very elite group of animals that these clinical trials are being performed?
No, there are just a few criteria that we're looking at. First is that these clinical trials have a very specific goal. We're trying to answer a very specific question. And so we use what are referred to as inclusion criteria. And inclusion criteria are just a list of questions, essentially, that we ask about the patient to determine whether the patient and the disorder are appropriate for the study. And so that's the first step in determining whether a patient or a client, I should say, can enroll their pet into a veterinary clinical trial. Once that decision has been made, there are another series of questions that crop up. One is expense. Our clinical trials are, I'll start off by saying there is no expense directly to the owner specifically to enroll in a clinical trial. Now, there are the costs of medical therapy, and there may be standard therapies that we're using, standard diagnostics and therapies that we're using as part of the workup of a patient. Because it's a clinical trial, typically there are also some additional diagnostic tests and perhaps some very novel therapeutics that we're using as well. In many cases, the cost of those novel diagnostics and therapeutics are covered by the clinical trial, so that it is essentially a subsidy for the cost of patient care. That's variable depending on the type of clinical trial we're running and the funding mechanism that's used to fund that particular trial.
Before we get into the different types of trials that are out there, as I mentioned in the introduction, oftentimes people are saying, why do you even have to use animals? Why can't you use cell cultures? Why can't you use computers? The things that you can do with computers these days are amazing. So how much really is done before you get to the animal? I believe there are various phases for clinical trials. So when we're talking about enrolling somebody's pet, where does that fit in with the major scheme?
So that's a really good question, and you're absolutely correct in that to some extent, computer simulations and animal research studies can provide us a lot of information about new medical technologies and new medical therapeutics. But we're looking to change the paradigm here. We're looking at our patient population as an opportunity not only to help our patients and many of the patients that would otherwise suffer from no current therapies or due to cost would not be able to be treated. But we're also looking to advance the standard of care for future patients. And ideally, we're looking to perhaps accelerate new developments in human medicine too. And our patient population, obviously, we're doing the best for our patients that we can in this process. So there's always some risk to any new therapeutics, and we recognize that. We have very stringent guidelines within the university to ensure that we minimize risk to our patient and optimize potential therapeutic response or optimize the outcome for our patients. And to do that, we do require that any new pharmaceuticals have some safety profile that we know is going to minimize risk to our patients. We also have actually two separate regulatory review bodies on this campus, and the first really is overseen by both states and federal government, and their reason to be is to ensure animal welfare in general. We have a second board, though. It's equivalent to the regulatory board that would review a human clinical trial, and that board really, again, takes a look at safety of a study, but also potential benefit to the patient. And so we really scrutinize these studies very carefully before we consider enrolling our patients into them. And again, I want to stress that our intent is to have a positive outcome for our patients who enroll in these studies.
So oftentimes, though it is a clinical trial, the outcomes really can be quite positive. There are, I'm sure, times when, with the best of everyone's intentions, no, the pet succumbs to whatever the condition is. But at least there's some hope. There's something that you can try.
Yeah, many of the patients that are enrolled in our studies are enrolled because their owners want to do everything possible for the well-being of their pet. And so in many instances, we're dealing with disorders. Cancer is a broad example where we've really come to the end of the road in terms of the current standard therapies that we can offer. And so a new therapeutic option in the form of a clinical trial might be an additional opportunity both for that patient and their owner.
You'd mentioned that these clinical trials will oftentimes have advances that can help human medicine. And as I understand, it can go both ways. So what's the role of the UC Davis Veterinary Center for Clinical Trials in the broad picture of translational medicine, how the research that you're doing in animals can help people and vice versa?
So that's a great question, and the paradigm is really shifting there. So traditionally, many of the therapies, diagnostics and therapies that we use in our veterinary patients were originally derived from human medicine. Most of the pharmaceuticals that are used in veterinary medicine are actually human-labeled medicines. Most of the diagnostics that are used have been derived from technologies developed in human medicine. And so historically, veterinary medicine has actually been a few years behind the times in terms of medical advances. And what we're seeing now is a little bit of a shift in paradigm, in that as we're conducting more and larger scale veterinary clinical trials, we're actually able to bring new therapeutics, new diagnostics into standard care much more rapidly. We're not waiting for our human counterparts to bring that to us. And as importantly, the advances that we make will actually potentially advance human medical discovery as well. We have a number of studies ongoing here on this campus with our colleagues in Sacramento at the medical school's medical center in Sacramento, in which we've got collaborations in which initial veterinary clinical trials have been completed at our institution. And it has led to essentially equivalent clinical trials being established in people. So we're very excited about that opportunity as well.
I know right now we're talking about dogs and cats, but there at the UC Davis Veterinary Center for Clinical Trials, you're also working with horses. Isn't that correct?
We take all comers. We really do have most of our clinical trial activity in our dog and cat patient population. We do have some equine clinical trials as well. Occasionally, we'll have exotic animal, pocket pet, and occasionally bovine studies as well. But again, I'd say probably 80 to 90% of our current clinical trials are in our dog and cat patient population.
It's what you're doing is amazing. And after we take this short break, we're going to be right back, talk about some of the trials that are being conducted right now at UC Davis and the other facilities throughout the United States where maybe your pet can get involved. We'll be right back after this short break.
Please have a seat in the waiting room. The doctor will be with you shortly, right after these messages.
I'm a U.S. Air Force member stationed overseas, and we have three rescued mutts. Stone Phillips was to be euthanized. There were bacteria crawling all over his skin. They called it elephant skin. It was rough, wrinkly, like a Brillo pad. He was in constant misery.
DinoVite.com.
We started feeding him the Dinovite, and his skin, it's a 180 turnaround. His skin has cleared up. He's not in pain. Stone is in excellent shape today. He runs, stays slim and trim, and follows my husband around like he worships him. I would highly encourage you to get a rescue dog and start him out on Dinovite right from the beginning, and they'll make such a difference in your life. Call 859-428-1000.
859-428-1000.
Or go to Dinovite.com.
DinoVite.com.
Hi, I'm Dana Humphrey, the founder of Whitegate PR. We have been specializing in PR and marketing in the pet industry for over 10 years. If you have a pet product or service you would like to promote, give us a call. We can help create awareness for your brand on TV, radio, magazines, newspapers, and blogs. Feel free to reach me directly at 619-414-9307 or learn more on our website at whitegatepr.com or follow us on Facebook.
Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets.
On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back to the Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio. The doctor is in, and we'll see you now.
Dr. Wisner, thank you for this. Is just some really interesting information, and it's always so scary when your pet comes down with some particular condition. I'll use my own cat as my example. She's always had a little bit of an upper respiratory issue, and I thought, okay, you know, seemed a little, got a bit worse, and I took her into the office, and I thought, I'll just put her under anesthesia quickly so I could take a look at the back of her throat, and I saw some changes back there that I had never seen in my 30 years of being a veterinarian in any cat's throat. So, of course, the first thing I thought of is it's cancer and she's dead. And thankfully, it was just a horrible bacterial infection and she responded well to medication. But I can really appreciate where a pet owner can come from when it's your baby, it's sick, and the doctor says, I don't know, I've never seen anything like this. What are some of the different clinical trials that are being held right now at UC Davis?
So I'll start by telling you that I'm also a pet owner. I have four cats, two dogs, and we currently have five box turtles. So we've
you better stay a veterinarian with all those.
That's right. It's in my genes. So we recognize the issues that pet owners face as well. We've gone through those same sorts of stories that you just described. So we have activity in a lot of different areas. I would say that our oncology group here, our cancer medicine group, probably the most active of our clinical services in conducting clinical trials. It's been a culture that has been established here over the last few decades, and it really is appropriate in that many of the current therapies that are available for cancer treatment, not only in our veterinary patients, but in people, are really not satisfactory. And I'll give you an example, and that would be brain tumors. We see brain tumors in a subset of our canine population. We have many brain tumor patients come in every year, and our neurology service is excellent at diagnosing and treating those patients. But the sad reality is that survival times for patients with certain types of brain tumors can be measured in weeks or months. And as unfortunate, the track record on the human side is not much better. Somebody diagnosed with a certain type of brain tumor, and I'll throw out the term glioblastoma multiforme. It's one of the most aggressive types of brain tumors. Can anticipate probably under 2 years at best in terms of survival rates. So very, very challenging and devastating diseases. We have a patient population that mimics the human population very closely in terms of how those tumors develop, how they grow, how they respond to therapy. And so our neurologists, and I'll mention one individual in particular, Pete Dickinson, is an expert in canine brain tumors, and we conduct a number of clinical trials. We've conducted a number of clinical trials over the years looking at different therapeutic strategies for treating brain tumors. Some of those clinical trials have gone on to human clinical trials as well. So again, we're looking not only to improve our standard of care in our patient population here, but globally we hope to see that translated into improving standard of care for people too.
That crossover is just amazing. I think what a lot of people don't realize is that so many of the same modalities that can be used for diagnostics, and you being the radiologist, MRIs and CAT scans, all of that's available there at UC Davis and other facilities also. Isn't that correct?
That's true. And the real value of clinical trials conducted at an institution like UC Davis is that we pack a lot of intellectual firepower here along with really state-of-the-art technology. And so we can do a lot of things that really can't be done anywhere else. As you mentioned, we have the full array of diagnostic imaging capability here, but that's just the tip of the iceberg. We have surgeons, we have surgical capability, we have internal medicine specialists, we have specialists in neurology, oncology, cardiology, dermatology, and every other ology that you can think of. And the brain power here is impressive, and that's what really drives these clinical trials. These are the people that know most about these disorders and the ones that know how to conduct clinical trials with the goal of looking for a positive outcome, not only for the patient, but collecting information that's going to really improve standard of care in the future.
Dr. Wisner, what are some of the other areas? I believe that you're doing some work in dentistry right now.
We have a very strong dentistry group, and the term dentistry doesn't really cover the breadth of expertise of our faculty in that unit. Dr. Verstrati and Dr. Boaz Arzai are real pioneers in a number of areas. Mandibular reconstruction, for instance, is one area that has really developed with their presence in our institution.
Another, and aren't they using 3D printers?
Yes, they're using 3D printers to assist in maxillofacial reconstructive surgery in our patients. And that has really caught on. That is now becoming standard of care, both in veterinary and human medicine. One of the other areas that they're exploring is the use of stem cells for chronic disease. And you brought up the example of your own cat having a very serious infection, oral infection. We see a very challenging problem in some of our feline patients. They develop chronic stomatitis, or essentially inflammation of the mucosa in the mouth. And it can be a very debilitating disease. There's really not much that can be done therapeutically. And these cats really suffer. And very recently, Dr. Arzai initiated a study using stem cells actually derived from the patients themselves. And I won't go into the details, but what we found is that in many instances, we saw a very good therapeutic response using stem cell therapy in these patients. And the jury is still out in terms of long-term response, and the numbers are still small, but we've seen a lot of our patients really improve and turn around in what would otherwise be a really devastating, chronic debilitating disease. So just one of many, many examples I could discuss with you this morning.
It's interesting you're bringing up stem cells because I have a very good girlfriend, also a client, has Australian Shepherd that was diagnosed with sebaceous adenitis, basically an immune-mediated disease where the dog's body started to recognize the oil glands in its body as being foreign invaders, mounted this immune response, and the fur fell out and got nasty skin infections. And seeing a local board-certified veterinary dermatologist after I threw up my hands because I couldn't figure out what was going on, after they made the diagnosis, tried, umpteen million antibiotics and baths, and we knew that Nikki was going to be going to heaven sooner than later. And as you said at the beginning, you know, if it was something yourself, you'd get on the internet and start looking around. Well, she looked around and said, gee, they're doing some work with stem cells. I wonder if that would work. So we basically started a clinical trial with Nikki. And we've been doing stem cells with her for the last 5 years, and it gets her under control, and then she goes back out and back under control again. So we know that it's not curing, but it's controlling. So it's because someone such as yourselves, and you've been doing these clinical trials, that it was available for her to use.
And that's a really good point that you bring up in that example, and that is that oftentimes her new therapies or new technologies are not able to initiate an absolute cure. Our real goal, and we're realists here, our goal is to incrementally improve standard of care. That's the way medicine and veterinary medicine have worked for centuries, and incrementally we're going to improve the health of our veterinary patients, and again, ideally, that will translate into some incremental improvement in standard of care and quality of life in people too.
If listeners say, okay, I have a pet that has a condition that I think needs to be involved in a clinical trial because we're just not getting anywhere, what do they do? What are their responsibilities if they want to participate in a trial?
So there are a few responsibilities. The first is to really understand what the goals of the clinical trial are. Is it really matching the needs of both the patient and the owner? The last thing we want to do is have a negative outcome for anybody for whatever reason. So it's really important to understand the goals of the study, what the limitations are. It may be, as I just mentioned, we're not going to be affecting a cure. It may be that we're going to seek an incremental improvement in a response to a particular therapy. And the other responsibility, and it's an important one, as we've talked about already, these are clinical studies where we anticipate a positive outcome or at least no negative outcome, but there are always risks. They may be minimal, and again, we do everything in our power to minimize risk to patients, but anytime we're looking at new therapeutics, there is risk involved, and so we are very conscientious about reviewing all the potential risks that might be encountered with enrollment in a clinical trial. And your owners might hear the term client consent, and that means that risks, limitations, potential benefits have all been explained in great detail before a patient is enrolled and before an owner consents to having their pet enrolled in a study.
Dr. Wiseman, you mentioned earlier the money constraints that can happen, but how about the time constraints? That must be very time intensive to keep taking your pet back over and over again.
And that is another responsibility. Again, most people who consent to enroll their pet in a clinical trial are highly motivated. They want to do what's best for their pet, and so we do in some circumstances have a fairly rigorous diagnostic and therapeutic regimen that those patients need to go through, and that does take time, and it is expensive in some circumstances. So that is another responsibility of the owner. On the flip side, institutionally, it's our responsibility to try to minimize the time and expense factors anytime we initiate a study.
Can some of the work, for instance, be done there at a university setting such as yourself, and then the rest of the time be done by the referring veterinarian?
In some cases, that can be the case there, and that in particular may occur when we have a study that goes on for months or even years sometimes, where we're following the response of a patient for an extended period of time. Now, there are some limitations to that, however, and that is that when we're conducting a clinical trial, the data that we collect, the information that we collect, the patient record information needs to be very accurate. And any time we start increasing the number of clinicians and number of institutions or number of practices that are involved, the risk of having some disparity, some loss of integrity of that data, that information increases. And that's not to say that one institution is better than another at collecting information. It's just that different sites may do things a little bit differently.
Consistency.
So information is getting potentially lost or degraded a little bit. And so there are instances when it's really important for a single clinician, one of our faculty clinicians, to follow a case from beginning to end.
Dr. Wiesner, I know that you're the director of the University of California Davis Veterinary Center for Clinical Trials, and that's being in California. Not everyone either in California can go there, or they're out of state, can take the time, send their pet, even if there is a study that's being done there at Davis. What other options do they have?
So I'll give you some information. Your listeners can actually access two different websites. The first is our UC Davis website, and the URL is a bit long, so if your listeners just type in UC Davis Veterinary Clinical Trials, will come up as likely the first hit on a Google search. So again, UC Davis Veterinary Clinical Trials would be the search terms that one would use. And that would get you to our clinical trials website, which is packed with information about current clinical trials. It provides information about what our inclusion criteria are, so which patients might fit into that study and would be eligible to enroll. It provides a little bit of information about what steps would be taken both from the terms in terms of the diagnostic evaluation and the therapeutic regimen that we might put a patient on. And there's contact information specifically to individuals that are conducting those clinical trials or a representative for somebody conducting those clinical trials. So there's a wealth of information on that site that I encourage your listeners to look into. There's a second site for those that might be out of the area, and we just created, this was a joint effort by a number of individuals at academic institutions such as myself, as well as people from industry and from government agencies, in conjunction with the American Veterinary Medical Association, or the AVMA. We have been able to create a nationwide registry of veterinary clinical studies. And again, that's accessible through the AVMA website. I don't have the URL offhand, but if listeners go to the AVMA website, they can access the clinical studies registry. Again, this is a registry that, when fully populated, should provide information about veterinary clinical trials conducted at sites all across the U.S.
What a great source of hope for so many people that are struggling with pets with conditions that just haven't been able to respond properly to present methodologies. So this is just fabulous. If there's one thing that our listeners should take away from this, Dr. Wiesner, what would that be?
Takeaway is that we are, again, shifting our paradigm here in terms of discovery and new knowledge. We're recognizing that we can advance veterinary medicine and potentially human medicine while simultaneously improving the standard of care for our current patients. And that's a very exciting opportunity for us. This is a major shift in thinking compared to the last decades and centuries. We're actually looking at things synergistically now. We're treating our patients with what we think may be better options. And if our hunches turn out to be true, then we're improving standard of care for patients in the future.
So it really is one world, one health, one medicine.
It is.
My guest today has been Dr. Eric Weisner, Director of the University of California, Davis Veterinary Center for Clinical Trials. Thank you so much, Dr. Weisner. This has really been some, I think, marvelous information that's going to give a lot of people hope, people and their pets.
Thank you. It's been my pleasure.
This is Dr. Bernadine Cruz. You've been listening to The Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio. Thank you for listening. Please tune in next week. We'll give you more information on how to be the best possible pet owner. Take care.
Pets can be a wonderful addition to your life because they're a member of the family. Keeping them healthy and happy is important. Pet Life Radio presents The Pet Doctor with veterinary media consultant and veterinarian Dr. Bernadine Cruz. Whether you have a dog, cat, reptile, or rabbit, you'll find answers for your pets straight from the vets. The Pet Doctor, on demand every week, only on PetLifeRadio.com.